everyone. I'm Heather, one of the Youth Services Librarians at Heartland's Carmine Library, and today I'm joined by Grace, our Adult Services Manager, Eric, one of our Adult Services Librarians, Marta, our Youth Services Manager, and Shelby, who works in our Community Relations Department. We are back to tell you all about a nostalgia read from our past, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark by Alvin Schwartz. Now, if you're familiar with our Nostalgia Reads podcast, this format is going to be slightly different. So, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark is a book full of short stories, and it's split into different parts. During the month of October, or Spooktober as we like to refer to it, we are going to share our thoughts on one part of the book each week. We hope you enjoy listening in. So I feel like I'm already going to know the answer to this question, but have you guys read this book before, or had you even like heard of it or saw it or anything like that?
Yes, I absolutely read this book back when I was in elementary school many, many moons ago. I had such a reaction to these illustrations. That is the thing that I think drew me into these when I was a kid. And even rereading some of the stories, those illustrations literally just took me right back, even more so than some of the actual stories. Some of those were familiar, but man, those illustrations there, they were memorable for me.
Yeah, I don't remember the book so much as I remember the illustrations. I know I read it, or I shouldn't say I know I read it. I know I looked at the illustrations for sure when I was like a little kid. I'm pretty sure I bought this from one of those like troll book catalogs that you would get in elementary school, but otherwise, yeah, these illustrations are just so haunting, even as an adult.
Yeah, I remember seeing these in my school library as a kid, and I don't know if I read all of them. I know I read at least one or two of them as a kid. The one I remember most distinctly was actually the third book in the series, because there was one story in there that haunted me for many years about a vampire. But I definitely recognized the illustrations, and so it was fun to go back and read this one.
My very first meeting of this book was, I might have been in maybe fifth grade or something like that. I wasn't too little, but I wasn't in middle school either. And I remember I was looking at the whiteboard while the teacher was talking, or we were supposed to be going into our little groups to finish the lesson. And the book was sort of propped up on the ledge of the whiteboard, like leaning against the whiteboard, like maybe a kid had been reading it off of the school shelf and left it there. And I thought, oh, that's very creepy. What is that? And so that's when I picked it up and read it. And I think I had the same reaction as all of you, where the stories were pretty spooky, and then the illustrations to go with it really ramped it up into something that is seared into my mind forever.
Agreed. I actually read my personal copy of this book from the 90s, and it is kind of a train wreck. It's really like stained. Yes, queen. Oh, we have like the same copy. It's like folded over in the same sections and stuff too.
Yeah, they're looking pretty tough.
I love this for us. It's great. But yeah, I specifically remember stories from part three of this book. And I'm so with you guys. These images, I think the images are what really sets this book apart from all of the other books. And I was actually, funny story, I was gonna try to sneak in a couple of the short stories on my desk shift when I was working a Sunday, because sometimes they're a little bit slower. I didn't get around to it because we got really busy. You know, that's totally fine. But one of the parents of the kiddos that were in was like, oh my gosh, that book is literally the scariest book I've ever read in my life. Like, I've read Stephen King, I've read all these things. There's nothing like this book. And I totally agree. I totally agree.
And it's wild that it was like made for children by someone who
I was thinking too children. When I was reading it, when I was sitting in my home and it was getting dark and I was looking at some of these images, whenever we get to it, I'll bring up the one specifically that I was thinking, oh, this is for children. Mm-hmm. This is a lot.
Yeah. And speaking of being surprised, it's for children. We got to talk about these covers. And I know everybody's cover is probably a little bit different. Shelby and I probably have the like originals because mine was originally published in 1981.
Oh, me too.
Yeah. So on the original cover, it almost looks like a creepy skeleton clown. And he's got like blue on his head and he's got a red clown nose and some blood on his teeth. And he's smoking a pipe in a cemetery. Literally just that image alone haunts my dreams.
Not to mention that his head and neck are sprouting out of the ground. You love to see it.
Also that, love to see it.
The cover of the ebook that I have is, it looks like a scarecrow, just like a black and white image of a scarecrow screaming at you.
I saw that one too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the one I had as well.
Mm-hmm. I've got a Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, the three books in one version. Right? So it's got all of them in here and it just has a very bloody looking hand, severed hand. Hanging from a string.
So that's nice.
Another pleasant thing to dream about.
Just absolutely lovely. And the scarecrow one too, in the more modern cover, like it actually looks like a real scarecrow. So was the ebook one like a black and white scarecrow like this, or was it like the real creepy scarecrow? Well, I mean, not that the black and white image isn't creepy, it certainly is.
Yeah, I'm examining it a little more closely now, and I can't even tell if it's a scarecrow, if it's supposed to be a person, because it has a very human-like face, but there is a hole in the arm and like crazy claw-like fingers, so I don't really know.
Yeah, like scary ghost person, but it looks like it's the same kind of style as the other, like the charcoal mm-hmm. illustrations from the books.
But it did mention like the rise in the horror genre. It was because there were a lot of monster movies that started being released in the 50s and horror stories were just everywhere in America. So apparently American youth have just been, big creeps for a while. But yeah, I was really, really surprised because some of the books they mentioned I hadn't heard of. But I was just shocked because I feel like this was such a cultural like phenomenon for the youths, all of the youths.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So I wanted to look up a little bit more about the illustrator since obviously it was so impactful on all of us.
Right.
It was Stephen Gemmell. I might be pronouncing that incorrectly though. And so I thought, oh gosh, what kind of things has he done before? And he is a children's book illustrator. And he actually won the Caldecott in 1989 for Song and Dance Man by Karen Ackerman, which if you look at those illustrations, they're brightly colored. It's about, once you know that he did both illustrations, you can kind of see it in the black outlines of the illustrations, but it was just fascinating to me to see what other work this guy has done. And he's had himself a good career between getting the Caldecott and then obviously being so well known for Scary Stories.
That's really funny that his images are so different. I love that for him. He's a multifaceted illustrator.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to see those books now. I'll have to check them out.
Yeah, I loved that part of this book too is just the amount of things the author has done. Like he was very into folklore just from what I read, like in his really brief bio, folk humor, folk life and other aspects. And he had two black cats at the time, which is so spooky. I love that. I love a black cat.
Do you think they cancel each other out?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like one black cat is bad news, but you have two, it's fine.
Mm-hmm. Then it's good luck. All right. So before diving into the intro of this book, I've got to share the synopsis like we always do. And of course, this was pulled from Goodreads, like always.
Thank you, Goodreads.
Thank you, Goodreads. This is not sponsored, but it should be. This spooky addition to Alvin Schwartz's popular books on American folklore is filled with tales of eerie horror and dark revenge that will make you jump with fright. There is a story here for everyone. skeletons with torn and tangled flesh who roam the earth, a ghost who takes revenge on her murderer, and a haunted house where every night a bloody head falls down the chimney. That story was creepy. Stephen Gemmell's splendidly creepy drawings perfectly capture the mood of more than 24 scary stories and even scary songs, all just right for reading alone or for telling aloud in the dark, if you dare.
Cute Goodreads, cute.
Cute. All right, so we'll go right to the intro. And I took a lot of notes because I don't know how to like do anything without taking 5,000 notes. But starting just with some images, on the first page of mine and Shelby's edition, there's like a super creepy haunted house, but like the moon is under the house and there's a rocking chair. And then there's just like a ghostly little figure who's just like living their dream.
I hate it.
Yeah. Instant nightmares.
The nightmares start before you even start reading the book.
100%. And as I read more of this, I realized the illustrations, they kind of reminded me of like the ink blot like tests that they do in psychology. Cause like the longer I looked at them, the more weird things I would see, which makes sense because like scary stories are like psychological. They're happening in your head. So you might be making things up in your head when you're looking at the image that other people don't see.
Very Rorschachian.
Yes. Yes. That is the word. Thank you. Yes. And then when we flip again, there's a creepy little old wheelchair with no inhabitant and a bird on a branch and like a shadow. It looks like the shadow of a house. So it must be like a continuation of the other page. So I'm already concerned just going into it. So then when we hit the intro, it's just strange and scary things. And it's like a bat, bird, owl, but it has like a human leg and weird blood dripping. I'm really frightened.
Weird blood dripping is a common theme. In
yeah.
It is. Yeah. I didn't notice the creepy human leg though. You're right. You got to stare at these things longer than usual, get way more out of it.
Is the white part its face, or does it have like a second two faces? Because there's a thing with horns on it too.
Yeah,
it might even have three faces because there's like a little like black beak.
I see it.
Oh yes.
And again, this will haunt all of our dreams tonight.
Indeed.
But yeah, the one with the horns, it kind of reminds me of a bat too, but like a bird. I don't know. It's really weird. It's wild.
It is wild. Yeah, I was thinking a little devil head or something. Those horns. Yeah. So many things to just, you know, let's bring forth everyone's nightmares.
Yeah,
it's like it is. It's like Rorschach for your brain. There. What creepy, terrible thing do you see in this image? Is essentially what I feel like he's doing with these illustrations.
100%. And we're happy to provide this free service of description to everyone.
Yes, yes. Hopefully listeners can get a copy to look at them.
Yeah.
Maybe that's Eric. No.
I hate it.
Oh, I missed it.
Eric has changed his background to
horrible.
Very horrifying illustration.
And look how happy he is.
My friend.
Is that one from the second or third book?
I don't know. I just typed in scary stories to tell in the dark into Google Images. So
I mean, that I'm one horrified.
Is from the third book, and it is about a bride that gets locked into like a trunk and they don't find her until she's dead, like years later.
That's what I'd imagine.
She didn't scar me for life or anything.
Yeah, the illustrator really thought, let me just really dive in and see what would a body look like as the flesh is falling off of the bone. I'll just go ahead and make that for you. You're welcome.
Yes.
A lot of children's illustrators would not be bold enough to do that. So thank you so much to Stephen. We appreciate it.
The 80s and 90s were a wild time.
Anything was allowed.
Yeah. What a time. Yeah. So in our intro, Strange and Scary Things, Alvin Schwartz tells us what we're in for, and he introduces the reader to how telling scary stories came to be. He suggested that pioneers would tell each other scary tales to entertain, but oral traditions date very far back for thousands of years. He postulates that folks like scary stories because there isn't any danger, and we think of it as fun, which made me wonder, why do you guys like to read scary stories?
I don't love myself.
No, I think it's the fun aspect for me, or like the aspect of, you know, seeing if you can handle it, I guess. I always love the idea of them. And then once I get into one that's really scary, it's always like, yeah, why did I do this? I don't really love these, but it's, yeah. So I'd say for me, it's probably a fun, creepy aspect.
I love reading scary stories. I think part of it is the just kind of suspense / mystery as a genre is really, like, really hooks you in, and it's just easy to get into and makes you want to keep reading. And then I definitely think that there's something to the, like, being scared, but in, like, a safe environment kind of thing where you can enjoy the fun of it, but then, like, oh, I'll put this away if I'm getting a little too frightened.
Yeah, I think I just like to escape from the real world, which is horrifying in its own way, and this is horrifying in a way that's completely unrealistic, so it's just an escape.
Co-sign all of that. I think it's a way to, like, kind of face your fears, and if it gets too scary, you can just shut the book, and I mean, you can hope it doesn't haunt your dreams, but it's probably going to.
But who knows?
But who knows?
I do like reading spooky stuff more than watching it, because I feel like when you watch it, it's almost a full sensory experience. You've got the sound and the visual, and, you know, maybe you're attached to the characters, so watching them suffer is horrible. With a book, you get a lot of that, but you don't have, it's not quite as loud and in your face, and you can just close the book or just look up and take a breath if you need to. So I like that. And also, on the flip side, it's spookier to read the book sometimes, because the author can really take their time and dive into what they want you to focus on specifically, and you can't get away. So I think books can be spookier in some ways too, but you do have the power to just kind of stop if you want to. So that's why I like to read them more than watch them.
And then he reiterates the importance of how telling the story is just as important as what you're saying. He says the best way is to speak softly so that your listeners lean forward to catch your words, and to speak slowly so that your voice sounds scary. And the best time to tell these stories is at night. So I totally agree that the best time to read, watch, do anything spooky is at night. There's just something about it that just makes everything, like, more terrifying.
Hard disagree. I like to do it in the morning so that it's less scary.
Yeah. Also, while he was writing this, I kept picturing him, like, holding a flashlight under his chin, like, while he was doing it. Like, whoa.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we have literally spent all this time talking about the introduction. So we're going to go to part one, which is, and there's a creepy image of a screaming scarecrow, and he's got a hole in his arm. He's got random stuff falling just off of him, blood, grass, who knows?
Well, that's our cover image on the edition that Eric and I have.
Yeah, it's super creepy. He's pretty scary.
I know, I like that you turn the page and it's like a jump scare.
Yeah.
You turn the page and he's there. It's kind of a lot.
Mm-hmm. And is, as Schwartz says, this chapter is filled with jump stories you can use to make your friends jump with fright. And it looks like we're kicking it off with the big toe.
Yeah, so the big toe, it's the first one in the series, so I feel like a lot of people tend to remember, at least I did, mostly just from the image of a small, creepy child pulling a big toe out of the ground or finding a big toe in the ground. Just to give you a quick overview of what happens in this story, I'll try to do it justice. But a boy finds a big toe in the garden, and mom says she'll put it in the soup because it's so nice and plump, because that's your first thought as well when you find a toe, which is fascinating to me, because not only should you be horrified by finding a big toe in your garden, but then let's take it a step further and imagine eating it. So I think that's like just reeling you in with this one. So the family eats the toe. And that night, the boy hears a voice groaning, "Where's my toe?" And it's getting closer and closer. It's in the kitchen. It's coming up the stairs. The boy puts his head under the blanket because, of course, you're going to be safe in your bed, right? He hears it outside his bedroom. Then it's next to his bed. "You've got it!" It cries at him. So it's definitely one of those jump scare ones that you're supposed to perform and frighten the audience at the end. It's said in the source notes at the end of the book that it's a traditional story told throughout the southern U.S. And the author actually learned it when he was serving in the Navy during World War II from a sailor who was either from Virginia or West Virginia. So I thought that was interesting that apparently it's from the South. But I think, I'm sure we'll see with a lot of these stories is I feel like you've always heard different versions of them. It's almost like they're kind of timeless or kind of placeless in the sense that you could see them happening anywhere.
Yeah, I really liked how Schwartz like pulls the reader indirectly. I had totally forgotten that there were like basically notes like you're performing a play throughout, and it's like they're like the reader and Schwartz are both in on a secret to get their friends as scared as possible. And I also just loved how he was explaining to kids how to be a good storyteller. I thought that was really neat. And I haven't seen a lot of other books that do that.
Yeah, I didn't remember a lot of like the section one stories, or at least I don't remember there being like instructions on how to tell them and when to jump out and do things like stage direction.
Yeah, I could totally.
But I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I could totally see it as like a live performance. It'd be really cool.
It's like if you're going camping with the boy or Girl Scouts or whatever, like I could see people doing this around the fire during those times.
And mine and Shelby's version, it also had an alternate ending where when he's calling out for the toe, he finds this weird creature inside the chimney who's just standing there. And he's like, you know, why do you have such big eyes and such big claws? Well, to scratch up your grave. And why do you have such sharp teeth? To chomp your bones. And then you jump out. And honestly, as a kid, I think that would have scared me the most. Like, I'm going to chomp your bones. And also just the Little Red Riding Hood vibes or Big Bad Wolf, Three Little Pigs. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Little Red Riding Hood. All the things.
You got it.
All of the creepy fairy tales. Yes.
I wonder how many hours of therapy this book caused for children and leading into adulthood.
100%. Send Schwartz your therapy bills. All right, so we've got The Walk up next.
I read The Walk. So we've got a very spooky illustration to start with of like a creepy looking tree in the forest. It looks like it's nighttime. There's a full moon. Maybe it's kind of foggy and misty. And there's two sort of figures kind of in the background. We can't really see them. Definitely sets up some creepy vibes for this one. So this was really short. It was about half a page. And basically it starts with the narrator telling us that his uncle was walking down a dirt road one day and encounters another man who's doing the same thing. And the man looks at his uncle and is really scared. And the uncle looks at the man and is really scared. And they keep walking. And then it repeats. They continue walking, gets a little bit darker outside. They both look at each other. They're a little more scared of each other. They keep walking. And then it happens again. They keep walking one more time, come to a woods. They both look at each other. They're getting more and more and more scared of each other. And then one more time, they go into the woods, they keep walking, the one man looks at the other and is scared, the other man looks at the other one and is scared, and then that's when it instructs the reader to scream at their audience and startle them. And I have to say, I think if I was on the receiving end of that, I would probably have a little bit of a panic attack. I think that would be very effective. I would be scared.
Yeah, absolutely. I was also thinking of like a storyteller, like on like a hay wagon, if you're going on like a creepy like walk through the woods, like Greenfield Village is the one that popped to my mind because they do like a Halloween thing every year. And if you had like a spooky storyteller doing that in the dark. And I also got to say too, I actually found the image kind of soothing. And I think that just really speaks to my inner like goth kid. So I was like, I kind of want to sit like under this tree in the full moon. And just kind
of felt like the two little shapes in the background, the outlines of the two guys. I don't know. I found it unsettling.
Yeah.
This is one of those ones that is probably way more effective when read aloud mm-hmm. than if you're just reading it to yourself. And then you're also like kind of running through the possibilities in your head of like, okay, what's going to happen between these two people? So you're sort of building some suspense for yourself. Mm-hmm. And I read in the notes in the back that the author, the source was given by the author as a man named Edward Knowlton. In Maine in 1976, and I guess there's a parallel Scottish story called My Uncle Sandy as well, so it's probably another one of those things that popped up in various places and evolved a little bit differently in each version.
So our next story is What Do You Come For?
I read this, and it is a story about a lonely old woman who wishes she had some company. She gets what she wished, but maybe not exactly in the way that she would like, as body parts start falling down her chimney into her fireplace, starting with the feet and then the legs and the torso and the arms and the head. And they eventually like pull together like some kind of gross zombie and do a little dance. And the woman asks it very fearfully, what do you come for? And that's when you're supposed to jump at your audience and say, I come for you. And it is just creepy and
Just
body parts raining down your chimney is pretty disgusting.
Yeah, and like the image itself is so creepy with just like the feet dangling at the bottom of the chimney.
Yeah, the creepiest line I thought in this story was, down the chimney tumbled 2 feet from which the flesh had rotted. That's a lot. And then So the illustrator really took that to heart, and it's this image of the 2 feet dangling from the like little leg bones, and you can see that they're bones and the toes are all gross and flesh is dripping off. It's really a lot. Myself as a child was probably delightfully disgusted.
Yep.
If I were the old woman in this story, I don't think I'd be hanging around after the feet fell out to see what else fell out of the chimney afterward. I'd be done.
She's like, I wonder what's going to happen next.
Let's stick around and find out. Also, like, this just kind of goes back to, I always kind of found Santa creepy as a kid, and I kind of wonder, like, he's going to come into my house and, like, leave gifts. I wonder if maybe I had this story in the back of my mind, like, it's a creepy Santa Claus, like, coming down your chimney thing, I'm coming for you.
It's Krampus.
Like, Krampus, yeah, I totally put that in my notes. Like, I kind of wonder if this was an allusion to Krampus. I don't know. I feel like this is just explaining a lot about me.
Because Grace trauma. And Marta, I did not read the notes in the back.
Let me see if I can find some notes.
We come for the notes.
We come for the notes. Let's see. It's a retelling of a tale told in America and in the British Isles. See, for the 19th century Scottish version, it's The Strange Visitor. And you should see Chambers. This book just has such a great bibliography. And a lot of the like original source material, it's available for free online because it's out of copyright. So I thought that was really cool too. Mm. Yeah. Originally, or there's a companion tale that's in Scotland. All right. So our next spooky tale is Me Tai Doty Walker.
Yeah. So another one with something gruesome falling down a chimney, this time a head. And if you've got a Santa vibe going, then you definitely wouldn't like this illustration because it's a bald man's severed head. And he kind of has a beard as well. So not a full Santa beard, but definitely now that you've said that, I can't get it out of my mind.
You're welcome.
And yeah. And the premise in this one is there's a haunted house where every night a bloody head fell from the chimney. So no one was willing to stay overnight there, kind of like the haunted house tale as old as time. So a rich man offers $200 to whoever would stay the night. So a boy said he would try it if he could bring his dog with him. So the boy tries it. He's there with his dog. And of course, at some time in the evening, they start hearing a singing sounded voice coming from afar saying, "Me Tai Doty Walker." And I kept saying that aloud to myself, trying to think of if it's supposed to sound like anything to see if I was missing the point of that line. And I really didn't. Maybe it's got a little Scottish lilt to it, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if he's trying to say something different or if it's just supposed to sound silly. But then the dog answers the creepy voice with his own little sing-song voice. This is Linchy Kinchy Kali Mali Dingo Dingo. And so like here we have, you know, the scared aspect of the story coming to terms with just the silliness of it, of your dog suddenly piping up and saying these silly words back and forth. So I think you can definitely see the element with kids enjoying this at that point. And of course the voice gets louder, the dog keeps responding, and eventually that head just pops right through the chimney, comes down, rolling, stopping right next to the dog, looking up at the dog. And the saddest part of this whole story is it kills the dog in fright. He keels right over from seeing the bloody head, which just made this the worst story ever to me. Mm-hmm. And of course, then the head turns slowly towards the boy, opens its mouth, and screams. So there's your jump scare for that one.
It sounds very silly when we laugh about the very nonsense words now, but like reading this outside in the cold as the sun was going down, I was like, I hate it.
Yeah,
I don't want it. Sounded very creepy.
Yeah, my three big takeaways from this were, first of all, again, this was targeted toward children, a head rolling down a chimney. So that's number one. Number two was he offered $200 to someone to stay. And I was just kind of like, ha ha, you'd have to add some zeros to that to get me to stay. Like, yeah, this severed head just rolls down a chimney every night, but you'll stay there for $200, right? And I also really liked the line, the boy went, started a fire to, quote, try to make it more cheerful in this haunted house. Like,
gotta do what you can to make it cheerful.
Yeah, I really, really loved that.
See, I thought the fire would be good protection against the head that falls down the chimney. Like, if there's a head falling down this chimney, I want the fire there because maybe it'll just catch on fire and it'll all be fine.
There you go.
Yeah,
and not the case. We all know that now, I suppose. You're not safe even if you have a fire.
Yeah. 100%. And this book, this story in particular, it was reminding me of just something, and I wasn't sure if it was like a short story like The Most Dangerous Game or The Westing Game, but there was something that I've read that was similar to this. So I was wondering if it was derivative of it. And I did not look it up, but I was totally getting that kind of vibe. Because I think The Most Dangerous Game, it's he pays someone and they're like hunting each other in the house. I might be mixing up my short stories because it's been a minute since I've read that one.
The Most Dangerous Game is where a bunch of hunters are hunting a human being.
Mm-hmm. It was a good one.
Yeah.
Loved that.
I do agree, though, that you feel like you've heard such a similar story before. And the notes in the back just say it's a retelling of a Kentucky tale collected in 1940. But yes, I feel like there's so many different versions of this story out there of just someone trying to stay all night in a haunted house.
And this is a haunted house, so it's not necessarily a safe space, if you will, but something that really spooks me the most with a lot of these stories is you're either in your house or you're in some kind of established space where things are supposed to be, you're supposed to be safe there. And there's some kind of creepy sound from some kind of creepy creature that makes its way closer and closer, and you can hear it getting closer, like with the big toe and then the one that we just talked about. And what do you come for? They all have that similar thing. And that's one of the creepiest things for me. Like, I remember my first nightmare as a child, and it was about something like creeping down the road closer to my house. I'm sure a lot of kids have something like that. So all of those, I'm just thinking, no, no, no. I hate it.
Thank you.
Hard pass.
Yeah, hard pass indeed. So our next one up, this one I actually had to read like 7 times to try to derive the meaning from it, because it's called A Man Who Lived in Leeds, and it kind of looks like the sky is raining blood.
Very cool.
Yeah, love that for us. Great, great storytelling.
Throw on some Slayer and read this.
Yeah, I know, right? And the first line is, some say this rhyme doesn't mean anything. Others are not so sure, which is also why I read it several times to see if I could derive it. So I put my English major undergrad hat on, and here's what I wrote as notes. This almost takes on a dreamlike quality as it begins with a man sowing seeds and ends in a death with a penknife in the back. It almost made me think that the seeds didn't belong where they were, as it was talked of being a ship without a belt and a bird without a tail. But as the bird flew, it began to get more powerful as it was on the right path. Like when it reached the sky, it turned into an eagle. Again, he guides the reader to drop their voice as the lion's roar is at the door. When the door cracked, that's when the penknife was stuck in his back and he died. And at this point, the reader is instructed to turn out the lights when his back begins to bleed. And when he announces his death, the reader should scream. So I ended up just kind of looking up some of the terms, because like one of them I wasn't familiar with was ship without a belt. And according to Wikipedia, because belt armor was the term that came up, a belt armor is a layer of heavy metal armor plated onto or within the outer hulls of warships, typically on battleships, battle cruisers, and aircraft carriers. And it's designed to prevent projectiles from penetrating to the heart of a warship. So it's like he didn't have any protection around him, which is why he was able to get stabbed by a penknife. And a penknife is derived from a British word. And it back then it was known as a foldable knife, and we would call it a pocket knife now. There was definitely elements of surprise throughout, and it was like the storyteller underestimated the power of the seeds he was planting and succumb to the penknife because he didn't have that extra layer of protection. And it also makes sense because the seeds don't grow in the winter time. So he said it was like a garden filled with snow. So there was no life to be had. And with the lion's roar, it made me think of in like a lion, out like a lamb. So like in the Midwest, March, you know, springtime, but there's definitely still snow on the ground a lot. So I felt like the cadence was also kind of sing-songy as well. And I was listening to that Wellerman sea shanty, and it actually matched the beat of the sea shanty really well too. So I don't know, what did you guys think this story meant if you did read it?
Well, now you've converted me. I kind of thought it was just supposed to be creepy, but you put a lot more meaning into it than I got.
Not me overthinking things. That would never happen. Yeah, I found there's a Scary Stories fandom wiki page, because of course there is.
Cool.
And it said the song, so it is a song. The song is implying that a man who loved to work on his garden had an intruder come into his home and killed him.
Ooh. Bummer.
I know. So I don't know. I don't know what the meaning is. I feel like I need to read it another 15 times and like parse out the lines. But yeah. This definitely gave me images. It kind of felt like he was in a dream. Maybe he had the dream while he was at sea, because there's a lot of sea imagery. I don't know. Creeped me out though. The more I thought about it, the more creeped out I became.
Yeah, me too.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then we have Old Woman All Skin and Bone.
Yeah, this was interesting to me because it actually has a little bit of sheet music in the back. And it's definitely sing-songy. There's like an ooh-ooh line between every couplet. And I will not sing this for you.
Aw, oh, man, why not?
Yeah. I don't know that would go over well with people's listening pleasure. But it's about an old woman, all skin and bones, who is going to church one day. She lives alone near a graveyard, and she decides she wants to go to church. And she takes a little break outside the church to rest a while, and then she goes to the church door and she decides to take a break for a while, and all of a sudden she just sees a corpse lying there, which my favorite line in this, from its nose down to its chin, the worms crawled out and the worms crawled in. So it's a really gross corpse that I guess is just sitting there, as corpses do outside of churches.
It's fine, guys, just leave them. Yeah, there,
it's fine. And then the preacher comes out and she asks, am I going to look like that when I'm dead? And the preacher's like, yes.
And then yeah, girl.
Yeah. And the worms crawl out, the worms crawl in. So I've only read up to part two, because I was telling everybody before we started recording, it's been taking me a while to get through this book. And I think it's because I keep rereading the stories and I'm trying to savor them. But I very vividly remember from my childhood that refrain is going to come back into play in part three, because there's like a lot of worms crawling around.
Ooh.
But there's a lot of death in part three too. There are very specific things I remember from that part, like just looking at the titles, I was like, oh yeah, oh yeah. 100%. But yeah, the image itself is kind of creepy too. Again, it's like the old woman just kind of like grabbing onto the man, and she's got like drool, and then there's a little skull in the corner.
Yeah. And one thing interesting, if there are any music nerds listening, the sheet music is, most music that we listen to on the radio is in 4/4, like the time signature.
Mm-hmm.
This is in 6/8, which is like a really weird kind of time signature to have like this sing-songy kind of music in. And I'd love for someone who actually knows how to play to like play this for me.
Yeah, I was hoping that someone would know how to sing this, because I would love to know how it sounds. But I bet you that's on the internet.
Friend. I was going
to
say, I bet it's on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Somebody did this for us, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just looked at that illustration a little bit closer, and that's pretty creepy.
This is one of the images that I was looking at this thinking, huh, the illustrator really, yeah. Really read this song and thought, I'm just going to go ahead and make a decaying corpse with like no jaw, with little flies crawling.
There's like, yeah, some flies buzzing around.
This was one of the ones I was talking about in the beginning, where I read this book and thought, wow, this is for kiddos. Mm-hmm. Great.
You also see, like, so the old woman, like, she's walking uphill, she's got her cane, she has no shoes, and she sees a corpse. She's already having a rough day.
I know, right?
She's like, am I gonna look like that? And presumably this is the guy with the top hat and the glasses. He has shoes and his hands are behind his back, and he's just like, oh yeah, that's,
oh yeah,
that's gonna be,
yeah, for day. Sure, don't even sweat it.
She's yeah. like definitely walking up to him like, I am getting too old for this crap.
Yeah, and it's like, I feel like the process of decay is already kind of happening on her, because it kind of looks like her right hand might already be turning a little bit skeletal.
Ooh.
And her eyes, they just look so like empty, like the worms had gotten to them and they became bug food.
Ooh.
She looks like, okay, this, I'm gonna nerd out for a second. In Harry Potter 7, mm-hmm. she looks like Batilda Bagshot after she's dead and the like snake is like in her body. Do you know what I mean? When Harry
yes.
and Hermione go in the house, like a dead person, but like walking around.
Oh my God. I hadn't even made that link, but yeah.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. And it's really funny too, like all the connections to like Britain and like Scotland and Ireland, and as well, because the author of Harry Potter is from the UK. I believe she is from Scotland. So that's really interesting. And I had not made that connection.
Thank you so much for tuning in to our podcast. Don't forget to join us next week to see what we think about part 2. But until then, stay spooky.